song sounds similar to you? A jury in Los Angeles thought so, and they decided on Monday that the underlying beat of Katy Perry's 2013 hit Dark Horse infringed on the musical copyright of Joyful Noise by the Christian rap group Flame. But forensic musicology is a lot more complicated than two songs sounding alike. Joe Bennett should know. He's a forensic musicologist from Berklee College of Music in Boston, and he joins us from his home studio. Joe, I understand you've got your guitar at the ready?
Yes, I always have it by my side.
Excellent. Well, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So what's your forensic musicologist take on these two songs, Dark Horse and Joyful Noise?
Well, I think the challenge that these cases always bring is that everyone has an opinion, you know, and so we hear these songs and people think, well, it sounds a bit the same to me. But obviously there's a chasm between the concept of sounds a bit the same to me and the idea of actual copyright plagiarism, that is copying something that was created by someone else and using it in your work. So as to my opinion on this particular case, well, it seems to me that the argument's going to hinge on that 8-note riff that we just heard, which I'll play a little bit of on guitar here. The first thing to say is the songs are in different keys. So Dark Horse is in the key of B flat minor, which is this key. And the riff to Dark Horse goes like this. And the song Joyful Noise is in the key of A minor, and the riff goes like this. So you can see why people might think that they sound similar. But lots of things in popular music sound similar, and one thing that a forensic musicologist would need to do was, first of all, to establish whether they are similar enough, that is to compare the musical facts. And as you just heard there, the songs contain an 8-note riff, and in this particular case, 6 of the 8th notes are identical, by which I mean they use the same or equivalent pitches with the same rhythmic value of the notes, that is where they fall in the musical timing. So the first step in a musicological analysis of a simple riff like this would be to simply line up the melodies and play them back to back and then compare for similarity, just to get to the facts. That's normally what a client wants first of all.
What's your take on the jury's decision on that?
Well, no one can ever know what goes on in a jury room. So with that caveat, all I have to go on is the music. And so to get to some of the musical facts, those 8-note phrases are not identical to each other. Only 6 notes out of 8 are identical. So you have to ask yourself, how possible is independent creation? That is, two composers independently coming up with the same, in this case, 6-note riff. And because it's such a simple riff, it's on the beat, it starts with 4 repeated notes, and it simply descends the minor scale. My opinion, for what it's worth, as someone who wasn't involved in the case but has analyzed the music, is that this could easily be a case of independent creation. That is, two people coming up with the same thing independently of each other.
Now, Joe, when you're looking, is there a sort of a magic number when you're thinking, okay, there's 8-note riffs here. We need to hit all of the 8 notes, but they need to be, it's okay if they're in different keys. What's the breaking point beyond just they sound the same for an expert like yourself?
This is very much the question of forensic musicology. What is the similarity threshold? And what I find interesting about this question is that there's a whole mythology culture built up among musicians, some very successful musicians in many cases, who believe that there is a specific number of notes that you can copy legitimately in a melody, or in audio, a specific number of seconds that you can sample from someone else's work. And the disappointing news is that there is no magic number. There is no statute or law anywhere in the world that has that specific musical information in it. And so I spend a lot of time working with my clients trying to say, well, there is no okay with copying. The law only has this rather unhelpful adjective, substantial. So if you copy a substantial part of an earlier work, then that can be considered copyright infringement. But what these cases often hinge on is the arguments back and forth of what constitutes substantial. That said, my reports often do get into numbers because of probability math. That is, the longer a melodic similarity, the more consecutive notes that are identical between any two works, the higher the probability that one is copied from another, just because it's, you know, it's the grain of rice on a chessboard theory, that the math multiplies up very rapidly, what theorists call Markov chains.
Joe, I'd love to, there is an example, an older example of music copyright infringement from 1976, where a judge decided that George Harrison's My Sweet Lord copied He's So Fine by the Chiffons. I'd love if you could give us an example of those two songs there so we can hear maybe why the judge decided the way they did.
Yeah, so My Sweet Lord was one of the most famous cases of the 20th century. It referred to George Harrison's song of that title from 1970 that was alleged to infringe the melody and the chords, because the underlying chords can be very important, of that song by the Chiffons, He's So Fine. Well, I think to start with, let's just hear the originals back to back. So when we hear those songs back to back, the first thing that hits our ears maybe is the production of the song. You know, one is a sort of a big acoustic light rock band, the George Harrison song we heard, and the other is a sort of 60s girl band vibe. And what we try to do is in forensic musicology in the analysis is to push past the production and listen for the core underlying musical composition. So in that particular case, that famous dispute over melody and harmony in My Sweet Lord, we're dealing with these melodic elements. This is the melody of My Sweet Lord, etc., repeating a few times, and then that rise to the chorus, I really want to see you. And in the case of the Chiffon song, it's in a different key, it's in the key of G, and it goes like this. And variations thereof. So the melodies are basically the same, but one of the things that we would do in a musicological analysis that's actually a lot more technically possible now in 2019 than it was in 1976 is that we would repitch the audio. And so what I have here is a little bit of analysis of the two, where I have increased the tempo of My Sweet Lord and I've repitched He's So Fine down a third so that it plays in the same key as My Sweet Lord. And I've lined them up, and the thing to listen out for is that I really want to see you when it goes to that pre-chorus or that chorus section, that those occur contextually at the same time and basically go to the same chord. So here they are, left and right, lined up.
Now, I have to say, that's pretty darn close. And I have a music background, but I'm not a musicologist. And I can probably see how the judge, or why the judge, decided like they did on this case in 1976. My question for you is, these cases are usually, if they're in front of a jury, not the jury is not full of musical experts. They're not full of musicologists. And so it's just average everyday folks looking for something that sounds similar, right?
Right. And this is a phenomenon that's particularly prevalent and, as far as I know, unique to the U.S. That is, these trials actually use a jury, and that jury is normally composed, well, by definition, of randomly selected people who may or may not be musicians. Now, in a dispute like this, either side would have, or both sides would have, a musicologist who would explain the musical facts to the jury. And as a musicologist, you're brought in really to only get to the facts, which means I sometimes disappoint my clients by saying, I'm sorry, there is no infringement, even if they think there is. But it is a challenge because, as I said at the start, everyone has an opinion on whether something is similar, but similarity does not necessarily mean copying, and copying does not necessarily mean copyright infringement. And the threshold for each of those things is higher in each case.
Are we at a point, Joe, where this type of lawsuit or these types of cases are going to become more and more prevalent? I'm just thinking, given the expansion and the way that we access music, how easy it is for people to produce their own music, upload their own music. I mean, at what point are these just purely coincidences, or really how much of this is how do you prove intent to copy or infringe today versus just coincidence?
Yeah, it's a real challenge, isn't it? How do you prove intent? How shall one know the mind of the composer? And of course, it's impossible to see inside anyone's creative mind. So we look for secondary clues, like the extent of a note chain. But in answer to the question of whether these lawsuits are more prevalent now than previously, there's certainly a greater awareness in the ether. At Berklee College of Music, we have 4,500 popular music students studying our bachelors of music, and nearly all of them are songwriters. So they are hyper aware, because obviously they're a very web literate generation. They're hyper aware of all this talk in the media and online about song similarity. So one of the things that has perhaps increased awareness is just the ubiquity of streaming and the ease of access, that anyone can create a YouTube mashup without purchasing a CD or whatever back in the day. But there is another musical phenomenon that perhaps contributes to this, and maybe the Katy Perry case highlights it, which is that musical gestures have arguably gotten shorter. That is, in the first half of the 20th century, the dominant song form was the 32-bar standard, which is 2 8-bar verses, an 8-bar bridge, and then an 8-bar concluding verse. So the musical unit was grouped into 2, 4, and often 8 bars. With sort of R&B and hip-hop influenced genres, we often have very short gestures, you know, a short riff that's repeated, a 4-chord loop, and so on. And because those gestures musically are shorter, obviously the statistical likelihood of coincidental similarity can increase.
Joe Bennett is a forensic musicologist from Berklee College of Music in Boston. Joe, thank you so much. This was highly informative and just a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us.
Great speaking to you, Tanzina.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.